Welcome to Happy Brain. My name is Sean Block. Thank you so much for being here. If you're new, this is a show we talk about the fun side of mental health, those tips and techniques to make our brains a little bit happier. And today we have Ann Swanson, who is the author of the internationally best-selling book, Science of Yoga, which was translated in 15 different languages. But her new book today we're going to talk about is Meditation for the Real World. And it is a fascinating look at the science behind meditation with step-by-step practices. And we talk a lot about that today in the show, is specific meditations for specific moments of your day or different days or your different experiences. Specifically, we talked about that time where you're sleeping, you wake up and you can't go back to sleep and you need some help. You need a meditation to kind of help you get back to sleep. And she actually walked us through one of those. Don't fall asleep if you're listening to this or watching this. And also she talked about another one. What do you do when you're about to get into a meeting with somebody you really don't like too much? How can you share some good energy with them and some good vibes to make the experience a little bit better? What kind of meditation can you use for that? So those are some examples of what we're going to be talking about. I'll put all of Ann's information in the bio and enjoy this episode with Ann Swanson. Cheers. Welcome. This is Ann Swanson. Thank you so much for taking your time to be on Happy Brain. I'm so excited to meet you and talk about some meditation.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here, Sean.
And I know you have a book we're going to talk about because I've dug into it a little bit, Meditation for the Real World. And I know it's not your first book, and I know that you like visual imagery too. So I know if you're not watching this on YouTube, then you can see in the background you have these two beautiful books, and you're holding one up right now. I can see them. Awesome. Very cool. We'll definitely talk about it. But one thing I read in your book, I think it was in your intro. I wanted to start with that. You said that one of the things that like is so easy now is that you can just reach for any app, obviously. You can go and press Instagram. You can press Gmail. You can press TikTok, whatever. But now we have all these apps and things that are available to kind of give us some information. What can you give us a little bit more information on that? I think you wrote that in your intro, which was really interesting.
Yeah, I went through a really tough time. I was feeling depressed and it was difficult to be with my thoughts. And so I moved my meditation apps to the home screen of my phone. Rather than just automatically going to Gmail and Instagram a million times a day, I moved those so they were harder to get to. I would just, you know, when I felt that need to click and get that dopamine rush, I'd go to a meditation app and I'd do a 5-minute meditation. And then just being guided helped me to get out of the thoughts I didn't want to be in. And so I would do another and then another and another until my mood started to lift. And I called these my meditation marathons, when I would just do one after the other to get out of that funk. And really, like, traditionally, you're supposed to meditate 20 minutes, an hour a day, which is unrealistic for most of us. And I don't do that all the time, a whole hour a day. But during that difficult time, my meditation marathons were like baby steps into doing that full practice per day. So it was really helpful to me to use the apps. But sometimes apps can be overwhelming also. Like, you have to search. Like, when I go to one particular app where people submit to, I'm like, okay, I want this one for anxiety. I'm going to do this meditation for anxiety, nice and relaxed. And then all of a sudden, I'm pulling out a green sword and fighting the Archangel Michael. And I'm like, how did I get here? So sometimes the apps can be like, yeah. I get so overwhelmed trying to choose my meditation. So I wanted to put it in a book format where you could guide yourself through it, where you could flip to find a meditation for anxiety, for sleep, where you could know what would help that particular situation.
Yeah, I can see in the book you have it sectioned out really nicely. You have like three sections, and it seems like for different scenarios, like if you're on an airplane, you're stressed on this or whatever, you can actually go to a specific section and kind of go through that meditation, which is pretty cool. I learn about that. But as far as the apps too, I can relate to you a lot. So a lot of times, like even this morning, I was like struggling, just kind of, you know, trying to get going or whatever. So you get out of bed and I laid on the couch and I like put on some, I use the Insight Timer, which is a really helpful app. But I want to put a plug in for Cultivating Calm, which one of my guests, Heather Lillico, published. And it's amazing because it simplifies everything. it kind of gets away from that, you know, an insight timer. It's like this Google of insight timer, yes. of meditations, right? And you, like you said, you Google like anxiety and you get like thousands and thousands of things. I have my go-tos. I mean, I have my ones. I probably for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, I press the button and I go, oh, I want to listen to that one. Repeat, repeat, repeat. But yeah, that really, really helps. But one note quickly on that, when you're doing meditation in general, do you always have to like really, can you just listen sometimes or do you have to really fully participate? Like if you're walking or you're in at work and you put your headphones on, do you have to always, can you just listen sometimes?
Yeah. And meditation can be in movement. There's walking meditation, which is a Buddhist technique that is included in the book. And you can also incorporate the meditative qualities and mindfulness into dance, into the way you view art when you go to a museum, and all of those sort of practical ways to fit it into your life are in the book, because I find that more effective when we can fit it into the times where we need it most. Of course, we're not going to all do meditation marathons every day. So if we can strategically place it with something that, like right before this call, for example, I'm a little nervous, so I sit there and I do a 1 minute meditation to calm myself, to help me get in touch with my intuition and do my best work. And so if you can put those meditations right when you need it, right before you give a presentation, right when you notice you're getting frustrated with your children and you might yell, that's when you do a one breath meditation. So integrating them into your life has been really key.
So it sounds like having an organization, almost a structured plan. Okay, in this situation, I'm going to do this. In this situation, I'm going to do this. And that's exactly kind of the format of the book that you wrote, right?
Yeah, I'm a yoga therapist. So that's how I work, is therapeutically applying yoga techniques to help people with specific health conditions and circumstances. And with meditation in particular, I have such extreme anxiety that I tend to pass out at the doctor's office. Anything having to do with my body, I just, boom, I'm on the floor, pass out. And this happens especially when the doctor is being, or the nurse is being like a little bit abrasive, not really listening, not paying attention, that quality of care. And so I went to a teacher and I said, what should I do? And they said, okay, be aware of your body sensations. Notice your breath and your body sensations as you sit there. And that's the classic like mindfulness technique that we learn, a lot of us, that's the main go-to meditation technique, either breath awareness or body sensations. So I go there and I start being aware, oh, my mouth tastes like metal. My heart's beating out of my chest. I feel tingly. I feel, well, boom, pass out quicker. And so I look into the research, and apparently with acute anxiety, body awareness and breath awareness make it worse in the moment. And so I started to realize, well, maybe there's specific meditations for specific situations that would help you more. And that's when I dove into the research and dove into the therapeutic applications and started experimenting with what helps with what situation. From, you know, when you're feeling overwhelmed from doom scrolling, you are nervous to go on a plane, as you said, you're bored or angry in traffic with road rage, whatever the situation is, what could you do in that moment to change, to shift your neurochemistry and the way you think and feel?
That's interesting. Do you have one? So a couple nights ago, I woke up like in the middle of the night and I was so anxious. I could not like lay in bed. I had to get out of bed. I just needed to do something. So actually I went and ate something because I needed to distract myself. But yeah, it sounds like, so that would be a situation. Is there like a particular technique you have when you're just lying in bed and you just can't sleep?
I hope we did not plan this, but literally that is my most popular, most requested meditation I developed for a client, and then I started using it myself and giving it to more and more clients, and they're all like, this works. So you can memorize it. This is not something you have to pull out an app. I don't want you in the middle of the night to have to pull out an app, look at a screen. No, you're gonna memorize it. It's called the down technique. And I'll tell you the cues right now. They're in the book also. And then you do whatever you can remember in the middle of the night, or really, anytime you feel that high energy and you need to settle down. So what you'll do is, in this case, you know, after you've maybe walked it out, like I think sometimes in your circumstance, when it's that extreme, you've got to get out of bed, you got to kind of like walk or pace or meet your energy where it is. So then you're going to lie down. If you're in the middle of the day or right now, imagine and feel yourself sitting down, settling down like a snow globe, all shaken up. Imagine the energy, the thoughts slowly settling down. And then I want you to slow your breath down. Right now, as you're listening, just slow it down. Focus on the exhales and a sense of releasing down. Elongating the exhales to feel the energy settling down. Feel the points of contact of your body against whatever you're lying or sitting on. With each exhale, it's like you're melting down into the surface. And wow. Then one last thing when you're sleeping is to count down. So you'll count down from 100, kind of like counting sheep, but you're going to count your breath. And with each breath, I keep feeling those exhales settling me down further. I've never gotten to one. If you get to one or you lose count, which is probably more likely, you just start back over at 100 and you keep counting down.
All right. I'm going to try this next time. I've been in a pattern where I sleep really sound for like 4 or 5 hours and then I just get up. And then it's like 3 a.m. You're like, ugh, I just want, you know, a few more hours of sleep. You don't want to be up for the night, you know, from the night. So I will try that. Well, this kind of leads us into kind of some... This was really practical. This is exactly what we wanted to talk about. But you had maybe some other keys to meditation and that science both point to. And I wanted to know, too, scientifically, why is this all working? Why does meditation work? And that's a huge topic. And I know that you had you worked with a doctor from, I think, Harvard that had some interest in it. So I'm interested in a little bit more about the science and of this.
I worked on meditation for the real world with Harvard neuroscientist Dr. Sarah Lazar. She advised for the research on meditation, explaining the neuroscience of how meditation works, how it changes your brain chemistry. And so there's so much science woven throughout this book too, as well as those practical techniques and step-by-steps. And one thing I was really interested in is what makes us happy? And how does that relate to meditation? So the first thing is there's three things. Let's break it down into three. The three major things that make us happy. The first thing, they found that when people were doing something and thinking about something else, like washing the dishes and thinking about your list of things to do, they were not happy. And when they were washing the dishes and they were feeling the dishes, they were looking out the window, they were listening to music, they were in the moment, you know, thinking about the dishes in that moment, they were happy. They found that being present was not only correlated, but it seemed to be a cause of happiness. And they found that people tended to mind wander, be somewhere else in their head, 47% of the waking hours.
Yikes.
Yes. And so being able to be more present is exactly what meditation teaches us. It's basically boot camp for your focus to help train you to get to be more present, to get into that flow state with whatever you're doing quicker. Mm. So that's key number one. And then number two is feeling a sense of connection with others. So the largest happiness study that's lasted 85 plus years has found the number one quality in people that lived longer and happier lives was they had a great sense of community and connection with other people. And meditation practices focus on compassion, connection. I dove into the compassion meditation research. There's a lot of practices related to compassion in here because they tend to really work, have meaningful outcomes to our physiology, changing our immune function, optimizing that, as well as lowering stress hormones and raising endorphins or feel-good chemicals. So you sending good vibes to somebody that you love or honestly, sometimes you send good vibes to somebody that you're frustrated with, like when you're in traffic, that actually makes you happier. It changes your neurochemistry, your blood pressure. So the second thing is like compassion and connection. And the third thing that meditation really points to and all of this happiness research points to is gratitude. Appreciating what you have. Focusing on what you have with a sense of deep gratitude. And there's a lot of gratitude journaling practices that have been shown to help. I mean, we've all heard that. Do gratitude journaling every day. But like when you really look into the research, you're like, oh, wow, I should definitely be doing this. You know, and you can integrate that into your meditation, whether it be journaling or just waking up and saying, what am I grateful for today? I'm so grateful to wake up here and this with beautiful weather with my partner to start this day. So focusing on gratitude in your day and meditations.
That's amazing. So if you can combine those three things, if you can be present, connected with the people that you love, and then write about it and you know, practice your journalism, man, that's a trifecta. That's amazing.
Yes.
One thing I wanted to ask about the meditation, one practical thing, is loving kindness part of like the number two, which is the expressing that feeling of love for all and connection. Is that part of that research too?
Yeah.
Or that idea?
There's more and more research coming out on compassion meditation in general, and loving kindness or metta is a very popular Buddhist type. And this is the one I recommend when you have road rage or if you're in traffic and you're really frustrated, when you're frustrated with a coworker, and when you're feeling lonely. There's so many circumstances that loving kindness meditation can help you. So what you do is you think of, let's do a little mini practice right now. Let's think of somebody who's easy to love in your life. If you're listening to this, think of maybe your child, your partner, your pet, anybody that's right now super easy to love. And just imagine them smiling and at ease. May they be safe. Repeat this in your head. May they be happy. May they be free from suffering. May they be filled with ease. All right, that's pretty easy. Feels good in your heart. Let's do somebody challenging. Somebody like 5 out of 10 challenging. Somebody cut you off on the way to work. You know, somebody at work that just frustrates you. Imagine them. It's pretty easy.
I got it.
Them to be safe. Yeah, you probably all have it. Okay. So the first one's easiest, right? May they be safe. Imagine them glowing and at ease. May they be joyful. We're happy. May they be free from suffering. May they be filled with ease. Notice how this feels in your heart to send them good wishes. Notice the shift in your physiology from doing that. And I find that it helps my compassion and perspective on that person because, you know, of course we want them to be safe. And also, a lot of times the reason they're being difficult or that it's a challenge is because they're suffering, right? So if they could be free from suffering, then this burden would be off, this weight would be off of their shoulders.
So we're talking like
good wishes.
So we're talking some, you know, practical scenarios and when to use the different techniques. Yeah. And so it sounds like, all right, I'm about to go to a meeting and this person like wrote some nasty email or did whatever. And you just have that kind of, angst towards them. Maybe just go step outside for a second, maybe practice what you just shared us, wish them well, wish them ease, all that, and then go to the meeting. I bet you it's a much better experience, right?
Absolutely. And you can do this in your head during the meeting too, if you're overwhelmed. May they be safe. You just say whatever good wishes you want. It doesn't have to be those exact ones. Whatever feels right. I find the safe one is really good. Free from suffering is really good. I just sometimes repeat one and you'll feel it's like a release.
So can you repeat those three things? Because I think they're so important, that those three keys that will really help us.
Yes. First key to happiness is presence, being present. The second key is like community, compassion, connection with others. The third key is gratitude. And I think of this as an action, as appreciation. How can you show appreciation? And when I'm feeling maybe lonely or disconnected, I'll put this in action into the world by showing appreciation to others. I'll write a review for the person that just served me at a restaurant. I'll write a review for this podcast, Happy Brain. It feels so good to actually appreciate. If you buy my book, Meditation for the Real World, go on Amazon, write a review. It's a way to put that in action. And then after you do that action of giving gratitude, giving to others, take a moment and notice how it feels. They call this the helper's high. That's what scientists call this.
It's the helper's high. That's awesome.
You release endorphins. People who volunteer live longer. People who do things for others have a more fulfilled, longer life.
As we kind of wrap up, just really wanted to talk quickly about the structure of the book, because we've been talking about this whole episode, the practical ways that we can use meditation. And you said scenario driven, like go here, go here, go here. I think you have it broken up into like three sections. Like for, I think it's like a healthy mind, healthy body, and then everyday meditation. Can you just talk real briefly about how that's structured so we can dive into it?
Yes. Actually, it's four sections, because the first section is how to meditate and what is the science behind it. How does it affect your brain, your neurochemistry, your body? So the first section is just the basics for an absolute beginner, or honestly, if you are a seasoned meditator or even a teacher, this is explaining it in the most up-to-date way, because I had Dr. Sarah Lazar, Harvard neuroscientist, advise me on like what is the most cutting-edge research? What are neuroscientists talking about right now? And then the rest of the book is practical application. So you can use it as a handbook for everyday life. Go to the section you need. So we have a healthy mind. This is going to have meditations for when you're feeling anxious, when you're depressed, when you're grieving. There's a meditation for grief, loss of a loved one, or even loss of a job, whatever you're grieving. So this section of the book is all about a healthy mind, even social awkwardness. What do you do when you're feeling socially awkward? What do you do if you're constantly like a people pleaser? There's a meditation for that. You're indecisive, you don't know what to do in a situation. There's a meditation to get in touch with your intuition. So healthy mind. Next section is healthy body. Meditation doesn't only affect your mind, but it also affects your immune system, helping you to get sick less. It also affects your cardiovascular system, your heart. That has been one of the hugest areas of the research, is lowering blood pressure. And it's a part of a protocol that has been shown to reverse heart disease. So meditation is really key for your cardiovascular health. So the healthy body is going through all these ways and techniques you can use it for your body. Right before you do a workout and you need to get into that flow state and zone to get the optimal workout or a sport, optimal performance in your sport. The fourth section is on how to integrate it into your everyday life. How do we be mindful while we're flossing, while we're washing the dishes, while we're doing everyday activities? How do we pair meditation with things that we're already doing? Because that's how you build a habit. When we look at the habit research, we see that if you can pair meditation with something you already do, like I make coffee every morning, I have the coffee brewing, I can smell it, I'm gonna meditate for that 5 minutes while I'm waiting for the coffee to brew and smelling it. And then the coffee, when I have that first sip, that is me feeling like I just accomplished something. Mm-hmm. I just did something. It's not a thing on my list to do. It's integrated into my life, as well as these 1 minute meditations you do right before you do a performance, right before you go to bed, to show gratitude, to get into that resting and to rest down.
I love that habit pairing that they talk a lot about. That that's really, really helpful. Like when you're brushing your teeth, like you said, flossing. We talk about flossing on this podcast for some reason. I don't know why, but it always comes up. People always mention flossing. Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else, any other wisdom you wanted to share with us before we kind of wrap up?
Well, I just wanted to let you know that I am giving a free gift if you purchase Meditation for the Real World, and that's 14 audio meditations that have the science to support them, and it guides you through them. You are not going to end up with a green sword fighting the Archangel Michael. This is much more grounded and practical than that. So if you go to meditationfortherealworld.com, there's all the links of where you can purchase the book, really anywhere books are sold, or you can buy it at your local bookstore, and then fill out that form, and you get that 14-day meditation, as well as meditation music to optimize your brain waves for the practice.
That's awesome. I bought the book a couple days ago. I bought it on Kindle. It's probably prettier to buy it in person. I mean, to have a hardcover, but Kindle's okay too, right?
It is. You could definitely get it in Kindle, and then but the hardcover is a piece of
beautiful.
Art. I mean,
yes,
it is,
I know.
Illustrated
and,
by a New York Times illustrator.
Okay.
It is gorgeous.
I just didn't have time to get it before the interview, so... Well, thank you. And I wish you the best luck on this. This book is amazing. And also your other book. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the name of it. It's just so beautiful. Yes, The Science of Yoga. It has these illustrations, everybody, that are just unbelievable. I mean, like, if you're a science geek and you like to look at those diagrams of human bodies and stuff, and it's amazing. So thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Happy Brain. If you enjoyed this, make sure you hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you have an extra second, leave us an honest review over on iTunes or your Apple Podcasting app. And until next time, my friends, keep that brain of yours happy.